Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Bus Rails meeting today on Monday, December 14th, 2020. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded. We do place meeting audios on our website for all the meetings, whether it's the full committee or the subcommittee. Just a few helpful tips. For people joining via phone call, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. You can raise virtual hands by pressing star 9, and you can lower your virtual hands by pressing the star 9 buttons again. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself, and you can click on the raise hand icon to raise your virtual hands. That indicates us that you would like to speak, and we can have one speaker. We do have interpreters with us on this call. So please state your name first when speaking. This helps them do their job well. It helps anyone joining through the phone calls, not speaking. Anyone listening to the audio afterwards is also helpful for them to know who speaks at the time. At this time, I will take a roll call of the subcommittee members. So please state your presence. Elver Ariza Silva, Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancing. Melanie Jackson.
Rico, I do not see Rico here. This is Mary Beth, the interpreter speaking.
Thank you, Mary Beth. We'll give him a few minutes. Melanie Jackson. Steve Caffin.
I saw him.
I think I saw him earlier. Mary Kay McMahon.
Here.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel.
Here.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg.
Here.
Bill Posner, thank you, Anthony.
Here.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Summerford. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simono. All right, thank you. That concludes our roster for today's meeting. Now I will go ahead and read the meeting agenda for today. We just went through the roll call of the subcommittee meeting. Afterwards, we will review and approve the agenda for today's meeting, followed by approval of meeting minutes from last month's meeting. We do have Terry Anamnachi. She will be giving sharing update with us about new Fairgate's alternate sounds. We have Dan Hibbert. He is from the Montgomery County Ride-On Bus Service. He is the division chief, and he will be sharing information about Ride-On Bus Service. Afterwards, we have Ombudsman Report, and David Schaefer will be providing that to us. We will announce the Hettinger Award candidate who will be receiving this award in 2020, followed by public comments. And we will discuss any new, old business and work plan updates. The meeting adjourns at 6 p.m. That was the agenda for today's BRS meeting. At this time, I will ask Chair Calabia to move the meeting forward. Chair Calabia, you have the floor.
Thank you, Anu. Any objections to the agenda as described by Anu? Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved. The minutes were abbreviated in discussion last week. Do I hear any objection to the minutes. Hearing no objections, they're approved. Now we'll start the agenda as Anu announced it. Anu, the first speaker is Terry, right?
Yes.
Is she on?
I did see Terry joining the meeting.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
I will start your presentation when you ask. Let me. So let me know when you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready. You're going to run the presentation and the audio?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Should I begin now?
So I'll just say that thank you for having me back. I was sorry that last time we were here, we shared information, but we're unable to really demonstrate the audio tones that are associated with our display. So I'd like to, you know, this is the opportunity to come back and share. You know, we've tried to take your feedback and I hope that we got it right. Again, you know, some things as we look at some of the visual and audio things are fixed, but we have one more chance if we need to tweak anything. So this is our opportunity to get feedback. So a lot of things are changing in with this gate in terms we have a lot, you know, a big screen, so we're able to share more information. And we are able to program some of the tones, the audio tones and feedback. And it's our hope to do this in a way that, you know, is intuitive and is not annoying our customers. So this is our opportunity to see where we are. And so the first audio sound is for the Fairgate in normal operations. So this is a positive tone. Now we talked about not having this on, turning this off because we'll get so many of these coming from all different directions. But should we choose and find that that's not effective, we still wanted to have an acceptable positive tone for when we make a successful transaction. So this is what will be programmed into the gate that we'll be able to, if need be, turn this on, even though in our initial implementation, the intent is not to have this on. So why don't you run the video?
Okay, can everyone see my screen at this time?
Yes.
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 Thank you. Yes. I would just ask everyone to please raise your volume to the highest because these recordings are a bit soft and we just want to make sure that you're able to hear them. So I will play it now.
And so the things that you'll notice with this video, and Anu can probably rerun it after I've kind of talked through it. So one is that, you know, we have multiple indicators to communicate. First we have the screen that will display, instruct customers where to tap the card. And once you tap the card, you get kind of a check mark or an acknowledgement of, you get an acknowledgement that says, you know, you get a tone that says ding dong, you know, that it's gone through. You also get a check mark and you also get a light that lights up on top that'll light up green to say it was a successful transaction. So if you tap this again, you'll see, tap here, check mark, and it gives you the balance on your card. Any general thoughts about that as a positive feedback?
This is Tino. I'm satisfied.
Okay.
Yep, this is Mary Kay. That sounded good, I thought.
Yes. This is Steve. It sounds fine. You know, it's interesting that the check mark is the most prominent thing in the little viewer as opposed to the balance. Not, I don't know if that means anything, but.
So we had to design, and one of the things that we're actually at a point where we can't change, if you look at the screen, and we can go to the next one, but one thing to take note of when we look at the screen, the way the screens are divided, there's an icon section, and then there's text. And so the text, we hope, is of a good size, that it's readable to a large portion of the population, but we rely more on the icons than the text. For that information. And I think the next one will give you another example of how that works, because the next demonstration we're looking at insufficient value. So one of the challenges and one of the feedback that we got, if you have a problem, we don't always know what that problem is. Why can't I go through? I just get an alarm and I can't go in that little text that says, you know, see station manager. And so one of the things that we've done is put some very common things like insufficient value or add value messages into the display. So this is an audio tone when you have a problem. The gates are not going to open. And this is the audio tone that we use based on our last feedback from the team of what to happen when you have insufficient value on a card. So we have add value and the balance. So there's a minimum value that you have to have on a card to get in or to get out. And if you don't have sufficient balance, it tells you what the balance is on your card, and it tells you to go and add value to your card.
Would you like me to play that again?
Fine.
Sure.
Okay, and so the barriers won't open, but you'll see the light will emit red. We get the X as the icon, and then it says add value. So it tells you, you know, what to do to resolve the problem, and then you'll be able to exit the system.
This is Darnice. I like the icons. I would be interested to know someone with low vision if they can see the icons, because they look very large.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope that now that we have this big screen and we can share more information, that we're doing it effectively. And so we wanted to have, like I said, both the icon message and text, and limit the text. So, you know, we can give you more information at this device.
This is Pat Sheehan. The audio sounds good. I'm not having any, I think it's agreeable.
Okay.
Don't know what anybody else is thinking who is visually impaired, but so far, I like what I hear.
This is Vanessa. I can't hear anything. I can't hear any chimes. Is that something you guys are hearing?
Vanessa, if it's possible, if your volume is not high to the max, you might want to increase it.
Oh, because I'm at 50. All right.
I'll probably want to increase it.
Okay. All
right. Thank you. This is Phil. I have a suggestion for the low vision people and the blind people, that you put this video online so that they can actually run it and hear the sound for insufficient funds, the sound for everything is okay. So they could self-train to what the sounds mean. Because they won't be able to look at the logos and the messages, and also make it available to the folks that are doing travel training for people.
Excellent suggestion. Thank you.
Okay, and I will talk to my management to see when's the appropriate time to be able to load this in, and how do we do that? Because I definitely would like to do that. I just need to run it up the flagpole. And get a timeline for when we're going to be able to do that.
Well, that's fine. We're starting early.
Yeah. Okay, so we can run this one more time. This is another exit event that's common to us. If you have an inverted transaction, when you have a problem with your card, if someone didn't enter or exit the right way, then you have a problem with the card. And this, you need station manager support. So the sound will be the same, but then we have different messages to say, instead of add value, it's, you know, see the station manager. So if we can run through this scenario. So it's the same tone to say that the gate is not going to open, there's a problem. But again, now it's giving you direction to see the station manager to resolve the problem, because this problem can only be resolved with assistance from the station manager.
Is there a tone that goes to the station manager so the station manager will know that he's needed at the terminal?
Yeah, so the station manager will have the ability to see what your problem is if he's inside the booth, to know that there's a problem in his station terminal. So yes, and you know, the station manager will be able to see that there's a problem. I don't know if he'll have his internal audio on to hear a buzz, but he will have access to that information when somebody's having a problem.
Uh-huh. Because again, for someone who is blind, if the manager is not in the booth and is wandering someplace, there's no way they'll find him.
Well, another great thing about these gates is that WMATA's updating the intercom systems throughout the stations. And so if you call the ROCC, the ROCC will be able to operate these gates manually and assist you. So if the station manager has to take a bathroom break or is assisting somebody at the ticket vending machines, you'll be able to contact the operation control center, and they'll be able to help you, and they'll be able to see what your problem is as well.
That's super. We need to include that in the travel training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so this is another one of the enhancements.
Terry, hi, it's Steve. I have a question. Regarding I don't know what they're called, the orange little guillotines that
the barriers.
Yeah, there we are. The guillotines. You know, I've always wondered, are they controlled by the individual's movement, or are they controlled by timing?
So they're controlled by sensors. In the last video here, I'll show you a little bit more how the sensors work, because there was a lot of questions last time I was here about the safety and the sensors. So I asked them to take a video of those sensors, and I wanted to talk to it. So if we just kind of hold on to the end of the presentation, I'll talk about that. Because I know safety and the concern about service animals and things like that was something that was raised multiple times. Pretty much every time I've come to this committee, it's come up. So I wanted to talk to it again. But okay, so the inverted transaction, I guess, see station manager, you can't do much here. The indicator light is red. And then we also have those indicator lights that come on. We also have a different color for DC students. So it allows us to know if somebody has a student pass that they're a student and they're traveling on that student pass or college student pass. We kind of lump them all together. But this is just another way to show how the information goes. It also tells you that you paid with a pass. So if you have both pass products and stored value, the display is going to tell you how you paid. So if we walk through this, you'll see again how the gate is communicating with the customer a little bit differently, or a little bit more information if you have a pass product. So instead of telling you your balance, it tells you you paid with a pass and the pass was accepted. And if you can see the light, it's hard to see what that indicator light is showing, but it's purple. So if you're a student and you have a student pass, you kind of get a special color. And that's just something so that if we're doing directed enforcement or something, we're able to know who's paying with those special student passes. But mostly it's just to give people more information. And especially if you're paying with, you know, sometimes you have value on your card, but you bought a monthly pass or you have a pass product. It just gives you more information that, you know, we are using the pass. We're not taking money or deducting money from the transaction. All right. And then this is the safety sensors. Again, this question comes up a lot. Every time I've engaged with this team, because safety is so important. And these barriers, you know, we have challenges with the barriers that we have now. And so I've talked about this, and I just wanted to walk through how the sensors work and how do we keep these barriers from closing down on customers and small children or service animals. So even though you can see these barriers, they open and close a lot faster than our current barriers. The gap is narrow, you know, it's harder to get through. Squeeze through, you won't be able to push back the barriers. I mean, there's a large force before you can actually push back these barriers, much stronger than what we have in the current system. But if you show the video, I'll talk through some of the safety zones. So if you're in this safety zone, these barriers will not close on you. So if you see these sensors, the sensors along the top and the sensors along the side here, that lets us know that somebody is in this area. And if you're in this area, the barriers will not close. And if we can run through that again, and you see once you pass the barrier, and so we have high and low sensors. So if you come through, you see the high sensor at the top, there are like 8 sensors on either side. And then we have additional sensors here. And then we have a low sensor. So if there's someone traveling with a service animal, anybody that's in that zone, the gates will not close on you. And you see the gates close a lot faster than the old gates. So once you clear that zone, the gates are going to close faster, make it harder for people to piggyback off of one another, which is something that we have challenges with now in the system. But more importantly, you know, if you're traveling with a small child or somebody, we have those high and low sensors so that the barriers will not close down on anybody.
Okay. This is Anthony, just real quick. I just have a question regarding wheelchairs. Has this been tested for wheelchairs or scooters specifically? Because what I'm concerned about, and what's happened to me in the past with the current gates, is that you go through most of the way, but it doesn't necessarily sense that you've come all the way through. So I've gotten clipped in the back of the wheelchair, especially if you have a bag that maybe rests in the middle. So I'm just wondering if this has been tested with devices yet.
Yeah, so one, we did a demonstration where we asked even the advisory committee members with wheelchairs to come and test this. But yes, we've been testing this with different devices and to verify that the high and low sensors work. And again, as you walk through this, you see the sensors are on both sides of the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to clear all of the sensors.
Okay.
So you have to get all the way through before the barrier will close on you. So even though the barriers close down faster, you have to completely clear that safety zone. And so we're really hoping, and we believe our testing shows us that this is an issue that's being addressed with the fare gates.
Okay, thank you.
Terry, just a quick follow-up to Anthony's question. What about something following the individual? Let's say a person is dragging a suitcase. Is that censorable or is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, no, it's censorable. So as long as you've got a continuous run through, and as long as there's something in that zone, then it will not close on it. So it should, it works with luggage. We've tested it with luggage. We've tested it with different objects. We have not brought in a small child, but in theory, that if you're traveling with even a child under 48 inches, it will not close down on them.
This is Darnese. Have you tested it with a service animal?
We have not tested it. We've tried to simulate what that would be to verify that the zone will not, but we have not brought in a trained service animal and had them walk through the gates as of yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I see Dr. Posner has his hand up. So Dr. Posner, go ahead.
So Terry, the sensor that you have for passes, the federal employees and some business employees have what they have is pre-donations from the feds or their business to their card, so that travel is used for business purposes, whereas they add money to the account, which they use for their own personal travel. Is the software smart enough to tell the difference between whether they're using their own money or whether they're using the money from the business?
So the way that the software works, and this is not so much a gate software as it is a payment application software, there are different buckets of money allocated for the business subsidized travel, what we call the smart benefits purse. And there's also another purse for refunds. Let's say you had an issue and we sent you a refund. They go in different buckets. The balance information that you see shows your total available transit funds, and it combines and adds things from the different purses. So that's what the balance information shows. We're also gonna have, as part of this solution, a payment validator that's gonna sit on the outside of the kiosk. And once we've kind of finalized that design, I'll share that a little bit more. But we will have information available for customers so they can see how much money they have in each purse. Right now, the way the application works is that it first looks for that business travel money. And if you don't use your business travel money within the allotted time when that money can be used, that money automatically goes away because you're allocated that money for a month based on your proven travel records. And if you don't use your entire balance, then that balance goes away and you go into the next monthly. We can't tell if you're shopping or if you're going to work. We don't have the ability to distinguish which trip, but we do have the ability to say if you did not use all of your transit benefits, they will not roll over into your other available balance for other travel.
Thank you.
I'm sorry if that was a little convoluted of an answer.
Well, that was perfect. We've always wondered how they figure out which bucket they're taking the money out of.
Yeah, there's an algorithm that tells them, go to this purse first, go look for a pass first if you have a pass. So we look for the pass first, and then we look for the smart benefits second, and then we look for the stored value. But the smart benefits has an expiration date. And past products have an expiration date too.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for Terry?
Okay. this is Philippa. I just wanted to comment. My screen was messed up. I couldn't do it at the appropriate moment, but the sounds were good.
Okay, I appreciate that. It means a lot to me to try to get this right. You know, the first time I came, there was so much negativity. Not negativity, no, it was just feedback.
Just an honest reaction to some horrible sounds.
No, but it was great. It was really great because all I want to do is get the best fare gates we can. And yes. So your input allowed me to make improvements, and I'm really happy to be able to go back to the team and say, we're good to go.
All right. Thank you for your effort.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Terry, before you leave, let me say, this is Dino, chair of the Bus Rail Subcommittee. This has been a model consultation. You've come back to us three or four, or even more than three or four times, and we've always raised certain questions or made some suggestions, and you've gone away and tried to work it out and then come back to show us, as you did today, so that we could hear it. Sometimes I get the impression that presentations by other offices are after the fact, that, you know, they're showing us what's been done. You've come back to us during the progress of your development of this technology. So I really appreciate it. And I hope in the future with other offices, we can have the same amount of cooperation, the same model consultation that you've provided us. Thanks again, Terry.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Very responsive. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
All right. Talk to you again soon. I'm sure we're not done. But thank you so much for your feedback and help.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm sure we'll be in touch soon. Next on the agenda, we have Dan Hibbert from Ride On. Mr. Hibbert.
Can I just mention this? I forgot to say at the beginning of the meeting that today is December 14th, and it's the United Nations Day of Older Persons. I should have mentioned much earlier in December that, two Thursdays ago, on December 3rd, we celebrated the United Nations International Day of Persons with Disabilities. So those are a remarkable commemoration dates that hopefully will keep people in mind, not only in the US, but other places, that there should be this respect shown for people with disabilities as well as with older persons. Dan Hibbert has come and he's heads the Montgomery County Ride-On division. As a resident of Montgomery County, I take some pride in the fact that Ride-On is the largest suburban bus system by ridership, the largest suburban bus system in the US. And I might add to that that of interest is that more than half of that ridership is low income or is folks who have an annual income of $30,000 or less. And of all riders, 80% are people of color. So this takes in consideration the fact that at the moment, the fares because of the pandemic have been free. But many activists and their organizations are advocating to keep ride-on fares free indefinitely. Dan, you want to lead off and tell us and show us what you can comment on about ride-on?
I'd love to. Thank you, sir. And just to say, I'm really happy to be here. Transit is in my blood. And I'm really glad to have a chance to talk about the work we're doing in Montgomery County for the region. So Ms. Yarmouth, if you want to bring up the slide presentation, there's some few pictures I submitted so you can see what we're doing as far as our stops and our new, brand new bus rapid transit service. You able to share that with you?
Yes. Can everyone see my screen now?
Yes.
Thank you. Sure. This is so much fun for us. We actually were able to start, even though COVID-19 came upon us in March of 2020, we were able to get the brand new bus rapid transit system up and running in October of this year. We're using brand new articulated buses made by a company out of Nova Bus, which is out of New York, and they have a really great standing and reputation in the business of building good quality buses. And they were quite helpful in the design of these buses so that to make them much easier to get on and get off. We actually have created circumstances so that when you board the bus at the stations for the bus rapid transit system, it's near level boarding. So it makes it much easier to get on and off. The other cool thing is all of our fare collection occurs outside the bus. We actually, when we start collecting fares, which we hope to start collecting fares sometime in 2021, we actually have validators and ticket vending machines right there on the station. And so you just board the bus, the operator continues on driving the bus, and the customers just, you know, get on board. We're also excited that we were able to install in these buses the new quantum restrainment system. And actually, there's probably another slide of that. We'll get to that. You'll see the slide in a second. But anyway, it's really very easy for someone to get on and off the vehicles. They're much wider on the inside to make it much easier to get around. And the design of the inside of the buses, most buses have a large technology cabinet, so to speak. And we actually were able to place that above where the customers sit. So we're pretty excited about it. We've seen growth in ridership, while slow but steady, we're seeing people see this as an opportunity to see bus rapid transit in Montgomery County. And we hope to grow the bus rapid transit system throughout the county. I also provided some pictures of the things we're doing at our stops. So if you go to the next couple of slides, you'll see
what Dan.
Yeah.
Weren't you going to also show us the inside of the bus and the quantum technology for self-securement?
That we've got some pictures and some slides.
Did you want me to show those pictures now? Or
Dan, yeah, that would be good if you could show those pictures.
Sure. Okay.
Dan, while you're showing those pictures, this is Phil. One of the complaints we have with people that are in the large SUV wheelchairs is the difficulty in turning around once they're in the vehicle, when it's time to get off, so they can get on going straight ahead. But in order to turn around, the space is sort of limited. And I wonder if these have sufficient space for them to turn around easily.
They do. And the nice thing is, because of these buses, the way they're designed, the turning radius inside the bus makes it a lot easier. We had to do that, quite frankly, if you go to the next slide three, or next picture down, you can see the actual, this is the securement where you actually just press the button and the system come down. If you go to the next slide, this is actually the device itself. So you can see there's a large area in the front of the bus that you can mobilize your securement device so you can just get into the position. And this way the operator continues on and the customer continues on. It's brand new to the system. We just tried it on these 16 buses. If we're happy with it, we certainly want to roll it up to further buses that we purchase. So we're excited about it. It's kind of, we're trying new things to make sure that using our bus system is convenient and safe.
Super, thank you.
So the other thing, since we're kind of, we'll bounce around a little bit here, the next slide's great. We were one of the first transit operations in the country to provide free face coverings. And we basically had to go through some kind of quick design work. And certainly we made sure that each face covering had its own individual package. And we placed them on every single bus we put in service. We actually started this back in late March, early April. And we want to talk a little bit about COVID-19. We clean our buses twice a day with hospital grade antiviral product. We also have a ventilation system with filters that we replace on a regular basis. And we try to make sure that the vehicle is not too full. Obviously we're working on making sure we have sufficient spacing for our customers. So we actually have a standby fleet when we find that we have overcrowding on certain routes. It's not always easy, but our operators have done an excellent job since the start of COVID-19. The other thing we did on our buses is we placed a flexible vinyl barrier between the bus operator and the back compartment so that they're protected. And we also started rear door boarding right away because we knew that would be a safer option for our bus operators. And fortunately, we've been able to keep our bus operators and our customers safe.
Could I ask one question, Dan?
Sure.
You mentioned that there are standby buses. Does that mean when a ride on bus has the maximum capacity for social distance, that a standby bus is summoned in order to pick up people remaining on the route?
That's the best definition I've heard. Thank you. That's exactly what it does.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, we find it, while the opportunity, we had to cut back on our service. Obviously, ridership is down. We are under budgetary constraints like every other transit operation, but we felt that it was important to have the ability to respond to when we have crowding issues. We do several of our routes have that. We put buses out there to help out. And they're staged strategically throughout the county so that they don't just come from the bus depot. They're actually out in the field.
Wow. Great.
So the other thing there, on my slide presentation, I just had some shots of what we've done at bus stops. Maybe you can bring that back up, Ms. Sharma.
While she's doing that, Dan, I must admit, while I think there's so much to praise about our bus system, some of the places where people are let off at bus stops, those bus stops are kind of miserable. And so I guess, well, this one seems okay for exiting, but there's no place for people to sit, or there's no shelter, for example.
We have over 5,600 bus stops and shelters in our system, and we're on a continual basis to improve our stops. I've heard the concern as well, and we try very hard to make sure that we, where we can, place sidewalks, place knee walls, place things to make it safer for our customers to board our buses. But we certainly still have a lot of work to do, but we've made some good progress. Here's an example at Travilla Road and River Road where there was no existing sidewalk. And we have a lot of those locations where we go in, we put a sidewalk, we put a ramp with a tactile strip. We make it safe for the customer to wait for our bus. Next slide. You can also see a sense where we'll actually run a sidewalk out to the sidewalk. So there's a connectivity to this bus shelter or the bus stop. And so we try to connect to where there's an easy pathway for the customer to get to the stop. Next slide. And you'll see where we actually put a backstop. So there is, it protects you. So if you're in a wheelchair, a securement device, you don't roll, it doesn't, you've got a place to rest against, and we want to make it level, and we're trying to prevent, make it so that it's safe for you, because you'll see that that's a pretty narrow road right there, but we've actually put it in a nice stop for someone to get off or get on the bus.
That is not a knee wall that we're looking at, is
no
it?
You'll see the next slide, I think, has a knee wall. Next slide.
Oh yeah, there it is.
You can see the knee wall, and we really, the thing about the knee walls is, while they're easy to maintain. They do provide a good location for someone to sit. They don't seem to be an attractant for graffiti, which is good. And it also kind of creates a safe zone, so to speak, when you're in the knee wall. And certainly shelters are great, but quite frankly, shelters are expensive and they take a lot of maintenance. And my job is to get as much accessibility out there in our system as we possibly can. So we do put in knee walls in a lot of locations, and we can get them in a lot quicker than a shelter. Next slide. And here you can see a little closer shot of the knee wall, closer to an intersection. So basically it gives a chance for both the operator to see the customer and the customer to see the operator. I think that would be the last of the slides.
Yes.
So there's a couple of things Ms. Sharma asked me to cover, and I'm really excited to talk about. We also started a brand new microtransit system last year called the Flex. Now we've had to stop it for the moment because of COVID-19, because we use smaller buses, but we are going to bring it back hopefully up in spring of 21. And we're excited about it. It is the new trend in transit to try and get transit services out to neighborhoods and communities where we don't have transit service. And it really is similar to an Uber, and it allows you to book a trip on your cell phone and allows you to have a vehicle within walking distance of where you need to be picked up. And inside the vehicle it's lift equipped. It also has a fare box. So we treat it like a bus, and you use either your pass or you pay your $2 fare. And it's designed to work in small zones so that you don't have to wait too long to get another vehicle. And we think it's a really good concept. We hope to roll out more micro transit zones within the county in the future. And we think it's a great way to kind of get transit out there where it's never been before.
Ben, that's great stuff. Will that be available to people visiting Montgomery County, or do you have to be a Montgomery County resident to use the microbus?
Well, the cool thing is with the next iteration next spring, we hope to have a call center. So you just call, as long as you are in that zone or you're traveling into the zone, you can book a ride. So it's actually, you'll need to put the app on your phone, but we use a company called VIA, and they're actually well-known here within the Washington, D.C. area. They're in New York City, they're in Texas and California. And it works really well. Their idea is group rides is the best way to go. And we really were excited to team up with a company that understands that we have to make this both cost-effective and reliable for a customer. Other things that are going on right now, I mentioned how we got ready for COVID-19. We continue to run all of our routes, although not the frequency that we were prior to COVID-19. Prior to COVID-19, we carried about 20 million customers every year, and we were quite busy and growing. We hope, you know, in time, things will get better in both the economy and our system. We can grow back to our pre-COVID-19 levels. But for the time being, we're covering all of our routes. We have cut back our span of service, so we shut down at midnight every night. But certainly we know that our ridership has still continued to grow, and we have people that depend on us. And we really feel like we're part of the fabric of our community, and we want to keep being there. It's interesting. I was talking a few minutes before the presentation about Wednesday, we're going to be out there. We like to run in the snow. It makes me nervous, gives me a few more gray hairs, but that's okay because people depend on Ride On, and we want to be out there, especially when the weather turns rough. Things that we're doing for our overall system is that we are trying everything we can to make sure that our service is up and operational and taking care of our customers and our operators as well. That's it in a nutshell.
Great. Are there any questions of Dan?
Tino, I see Vanessa has her hand up. Vanessa, go ahead. Vanessa, you're on mute.
I think she's still on mute.
Yeah. Vanessa, if you can unmute yourself and go ahead and ask your question.
Well, while she's trying to fix that, Dan, you mentioned VIA, which assists with this on-demand service that you described. Is that VIA, which is also working with the District of Columbia's service, that's the same VIA?
Same company.
Uh-huh. But we're also using it for abilities right now, Tino.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they've been very helpful in helping our design our networks. We were fortunate enough to receive a COG grant to do an analysis of the flex zones, which helps us to design future zones. I think it's really important that we create zones that are not so big so that the vehicles can service the rides, because quite frankly, my competition is Uber. So I want to be out there, being out there first, so to speak.
How does the fare fare of the system that you describe compare with Uber?
We're cheaper, right. Just to be blunt. We're at $2. It's just like a regular ride on your transit bus. It's got a fare box inside, and it works just the same way if you had a pass or if you had to pay cash or a Smart Trip card. Mm-hmm. And that makes us different. And the one thing that helps me to do is we have to record all our travel onto the National Transit Database. And by doing this with the fare box, we are in compliance with all the things I have to do for the federal government. So it works really well.
Is Vanessa off already?
Vanessa, I'm not able to.
I'm sorry. Yes, I was having difficulties taking myself off mute. The system sounds really nice. Montgomery County is certainly a place to consider living. What I wanted to ask is, at your bus stops, what came to my mind is there any type of, well, maybe at the ones where you can sit inside, I forget what you call them, some type of microphone system, alert system, in case something's going on outside that would alert? Are these posts at near metro stops, these bus stops, is the ones that I'm talking about?
Well, some of our shelters do have power to them, some do not. And that's actually my biggest challenge, is getting power to shelters. We actually are starting to do a study on using solar panels on top of shelters so that there's power to the shelter itself, that you can do the additional things you talk about. And quite frankly, the technology is running fast in the transit world about how you can make your bus shelter more amenable to the customers waiting. I'd like to cut, there are some shelters out there where they press a button, a light goes on, so the operator sees mm-hmm. there's somebody waiting in the shelter. And so we're looking at those things right now, but really my biggest challenge is getting power to a shelter.
Right.
But certainly we would love to have power at all our stops, but 5,000 stops,
yeah,
a little bit challenging.
Yes. Well, great system. It sounds like a really nice system. I wish PG had something like that.
Well, I got a great team. We have a great team of over 700 operators and a great department in the Montgomery County Department of Transportation that supports us. And quite frankly, my county council and county executive are certainly looking at how we can make our transit system work to reduce greenhouse gases. We just received 4 electric buses this past year. We have another 10 more electric buses coming next year. And certainly we're looking at how we can make our fleet much more amenable to protecting the environment.
Very good. Thank you.
May I ask our activists who are pressing WMATA also to go electric? So that's interesting what you said. I'm sorry, Andrew, did you have another hand up?
I believe Steve has a question.
Steve?
Oh, yes. First, is there, how do I raise my hand, or am I able to raise my hand? Do you know?
Yeah, Steve, click on participants. And when the list of participants comes up, at the bottom of the list, it says, raise hand, yes, no, go slower, go faster.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. Dan, very impressive, very impressive. I have a question about the configuration of the bus, which is a classy looking bus. In fact, in some ways, it almost looks like a metro car. I noticed that all of the seats are raised up above as opposed to just sliding in, even the ones that are on the sides. And I'm wondering the thought process involved for having all of the seats raised up a step above the walk-in area.
Well, the buses we purchased with the seats, it's kind of one of their standard designs, but you raise a good point that maybe we need to have certain sections of seats that are a little bit lower, more easier to get into. And I'll take that. That's a good suggestion, actually. Because we're in the process of developing another 5-year RFP for purchasing buses here in Montgomery County. And that is the kind of a suggestion I love to hear. We've made a lot of changes to the inside of our buses based on suggestions just like that. If you look at our brand new Flash or BRT buses, there are actually 3 screens inside of it, so we get as much information out to the customers. And you'll also see that there are no pull cords in my Flash buses because it stops at every stop. So there's some of the simple things, but realistically, that's a good idea if we had some lower seating seats for someone to get into a seat easier. That's a good suggestion. Thank you.
Okay, next we have
Darnice
Bush.
Ms.
Bush, go ahead.
Basically, this is Darnice. I wanted to know whether or not you have many people that use motorized scooters instead of wheelchairs, and how accessible are your buses to them?
All of our buses meet ADA standards or exceed them. Certainly our flash buses, the brand new buses we just purchased, actually exceeded with the turning radius inside the vehicle. But all of our buses are low floor, so there are no lifts at all involved, except for the smaller microtransit flex buses. They're lift equipped. But all of our other buses are low floor and meet or exceed ADA standards. We most of our buses, quite frankly, are made by a company called Gillig, which is an American-made company out of California. And they make a really good quality product, and they stand by their products. And we've been quite happy with the work so far in giving us buses that really can meet our customers' needs.
Okay, thank you.
What's the name of the bus company?
Gillig, G-I-L-L-I-G.
Dan, do you know who makes the buses used by Circulator?
Well, I offhand do not know. It might be a company called New Flyer. Or it could be another. There are several, the big three, so to speak, are New Flyer, Gillig are the big two, actually. And then there are other several companies out there that are in the market that make smaller buses. Our electric buses, by the way, are made by a company called Proterra. But all the major manufacturers are starting to build electric buses as well. But Gillig and New Flyer are the big players in the market.
Okay. Next, we have Anthony. Anthony, go ahead.
Hi, this is Anthony. Just a couple of quick questions. I'm wondering if, because, you know, we're still in a pandemic situation, I'm wondering how many riders you've had, or if you know how many riders you've had with wheelchairs or devices, as Jarnice was asking, so far. And then the other question is, from one of the pictures, I think it was the first one, it looked like there was a ramp on the back of the bus as well. Did I see that correctly? Is it possible for people who use devices to exit and enter from the back of the bus?
For your first question, I'd have to get back to you on that. I don't have that information with me right now. For the second question on the articulated buses we purchased, the ramp is only in the front of the bus, but all the doors have what they call a bridge, so that when you pull up to the station, if you're using a mobility device, you can still access the bus because there's actually a little bridge plate that comes out from the side of the bus. And that was quite an engineering challenge for our manufacturers, because it says we can't have any of our doors that are not accessible. But all of the buses have ramps in the front, and all the boarding and loading and securements are in the front of the bus. Because also, quite frankly, our bus operators are there to assist our customers. And you'll notice I don't say passengers. It's one thing that always drives me crazy in the transit business when people say they're passengers. In my view, you're paying for a service, you're a customer.
Okay, Chair Calabia, I see your hand up.
Yes. There's much to be proud of about the ride-on system of serving Montgomery County. We tried to have someone from Northern Virginia. Is there a friendly counterpart that you might suggest we contact? We weren't able to get anyone from Northern Virginia, any of the companies there.
Well, certainly a similar size system is the Fairfax Connector.
Okay.
And while they are a contracted operation service, it's still a county provided service.
Okay.
And they do a good job in Northern Virginia and have helped Northern Virginia grow, quite frankly. So I would reach out to the Fairfax Connector and see if there is a manager there that they love to, we love to talk about our stuff.
Right.
So you may want to give them a call.
Okay, great. Is there anyone else?
Yes, Vanessa has her hand up, and then Carol. Vanessa, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yes, I don't know, you probably have addressed the audio. Is there, for those that are blind that may be taking the bus, is it announcing the stop that is coming to, or is the driver announcing the stops?
All of our buses, we have over 390 buses in the ride-on system. They're all actually, we have GPS tracking on all of our buses. Actually, we actually geocode in the stops. So the stops are automatically announced via the system on the bus. And so that ensures that the operator is focusing in on their operation of the vehicle, and the system is there to support both the operators and the customers. So that's what we have built into every one of our systems. And quite frankly, we're getting a new version of our computer-aided dispatch program starting next year, so that we'll even have greater accuracy on where our buses are and how we can track our customers, who's boarding, how often they're boarding, those kind of things. But certainly every single bus is GPS tracked, and the annunciation system is tied into that. But that's a great question. Thank you.
So when it stops, because you say it stops at every stop, how long is it waiting? Because is it giving people enough time to get through or to find their way out, or wheelchairs, whatever, to get off? How long is that wait?
It certainly depends on our bus operator. The one thing that I take great pride in, we have a good team of bus operators out there working every day, and they have to use their judgment as they're riding down the road. Sometimes it takes longer, and I said, take the time you need to be safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Good question, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're next, go ahead, please.
Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. I knew I didn't hear my name. Okay. Dan, thank you so much for such a nice presentation. I have a question. Well, I wanted to maybe just make an additional comment about the BRT articulated buses that have the an accessible entrance both at the front and the back. And those buses need, for those two doors to be accessible, they need to stop at a particular bus stop that is raised above the curb height. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, certainly those buses can serve as a standard bus stop, but they are designed for the stopping at the stations so that it's level boarding. But if push comes, if it's an urgent that they have to stop at a bus stop that's not a station, that's where the front platform can lower down to make it accessible boarding or embarking on the vehicle.
Okay, so when it's a regular bus stop, only the front door would be able to be accessible.
Yes.
Otherwise, you have the specialized platform, such as the one at the Silver Spring Transit Center?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. And that's the intent, is because with the level boarding, we can get people on and off quicker. And the one thing transit has to compete with is getting there quicker by car. So the sooner I get you on and seated, or as soon as I get you on, then we can get on going. And then we're excited about the whole concept that the fare collection is taken off board the vehicle. We actually have kind of created in-house our own validators so that you come up and tap your Smart Trip card. And we the ticket vending machines are designed for this kind of program. So we're excited about getting it operational. But certainly we won't start collecting fares until we have the bus operator partitions in front installed, which we're going to be doing in January. Just like every other transit operation across the country, we're all installing barriers to provide a safer compartment for our bus operators. And so we will probably start to collect fares sometime in February when we feel we're safe and ready to roll.
Thank you.
Okay. By the way, they run these buses in Toronto, Canada, so I'm ready for Wednesday.
Okay. I do not see anyone else's hand up. Chair Calabia.
Very good. Well then, thank you very much, Dan. You represent a superior suburban service, well, superior bus service in general. And so we thank you for describing your services. And Steve is giving you some ideas. By the way, Steve has written a book about bus transportation. So he's a good one to provide suggestions. In any event, thank you again. And we will contact the Fairfax company to see if they can deliver the same kind of presentation that you did. Thanks again, Dan.
It's been my pleasure and fun to talk about transit. Call me anytime.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Dan. Okay.
Hey, Mr. Chair, before you go to your next subject, can I just add a little something to a question or comment Ms. Coles made?
Sure.
Okay, so she says Ms. Coles wanted or wished Prince George's had something similar. Now, this doesn't cover the entirety of Prince George's County. It's the National Harbor area, excuse me, the Fort Washington area from National Harbor to East Swan Creek Road. I don't know if that helps you or not, Ms. Coles, but Prince George's County has recently launched a similar on-demand service that was being described in Montgomery County. They're labeling their service as small neighborhood link bus. It's called the Prince George's Link, and it's a similar type of microtransit, small neighborhood microtransit service in the Fort Washington area. So while it's not totally countywide yet, Prince George's has launched something similar. Just wanted to share that in response to the comment.
Thank you, Ms. Blake.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, now, Anu, were we to hear from Dave?
Yes, David Schaefer is up next. David, we are ready for your ombudsman report.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening. I don't have too much for the ombudsman report this month. We did want to let Phil know that the signs on the lower level of Roslyn have been cleaned and reported back looking good. So that's taken care of. We also got an interesting report from our people that deal with the accessible gates and the fare collection. And they have shown that they've now got the incidences of broken or non-responding gates down to about a tenth of what it was 3 years ago and still making progress. And I'm sure some of it's due right now to the fact that the gates aren't being used as much, but these failures, they call them lost signals, when the gate becomes unresponsive, then have really, really come down to the increased maintenance on those. So those are the only two items I had for the month. Does anybody have any issues that you want me to look into?
David, it's Christmas time, so it's time for me to ask if they can get the down escalators in the multi-escalator stations closest to the entrance gates.
Always willing to revisit that, but we didn't make too much impact the last time.
It's Christmas.
Yep. Hanukkah too.
Yes. And Kwanzaa.
Yes.
One question, Dave. It's almost the end of the year, and Paul Kelly is asked me again what the status is of the Friendship Heights problem, the lighting problem in Friendship Heights Station.
I think Carol's been working on that, or aware more of that than I am at the moment. There was some redesign issues, weren't there, Carol?
There have been a few things that have happened. They've relamped some of those. They've been having some, how do I call it? I hate to just call it technical issues, but there were some light fixtures that there was a misconnection or something, and therefore they put temporary lighting. Uh-huh. And so that they've had to put temporary lighting, which is not the best thing because they're just these light bulbs that are lighting up. And in some cases, so we've escalated it to be a design problem that needs to be addressed. And that's where it's at. We have not completely fixed it. We've been addressing it, but everything's been a temporary solution.
So it's a design problem, but they
are... Well, at this point it is.
Okay, so I'll report to him that. The next item, Anu, is the Hettinger Award.
Yes. So we have had the nominees and we have had the votes. Very proud to say that Charlie Crawford is the one who would be getting the award this year. We do need to work on the giving the award, coordinate with his wife, and that probably can be done sometime in January, perhaps. That's the timeline. And Dr. Posner, did you want to add anything further to that?
One thank Anu, because she ran this very smoothly, and thank the committee. And next year, hopefully, we will be back in Jerusalem and we can have a live award.
Right, yes. So now we're at the public comment period, are we?
Yes, we are. And I did not receive any emails for public comments. I did not receive any messages for public comments either. I would also remind everyone who would like to share their, submit their public comments, they can do so in writing by sending us an email at metroaacchair@vamada.com or call at 202-962-1100, leave a message and we will call them back.
Anu, Anu, yes. You know, I am so sorry. I have two microphones here. I'm moving files from an old computer to a new computer, and I'm trying to say something in the wrong microphone. So I'm very sorry about that. Yeah, David, this is for you. David. Could I? I'm wondering if you might be the right person to see if it's possible to get the number 43 bus, which is currently an express bus running down Connecticut Avenue and going express and bypassing the three DuPont Circle stops, which is where a large population of seniors live and board and debark. I'm wondering whether you could see if it was possible for the 43 bus to make the local stops during this emergency pandemic period. A lot of the seniors take their only trips, it seems, from what I see, using the bus to go shopping from DuPont Circle up north and coming back down to the CVS, which is at DuPont Circle. And while the 43, which is a new bus, is running express during the pandemic, I think if it could run local, particularly since there's now no traffic at DuPont Circle, I wonder if that's something you might be the person to look into.
Well, I believe I raised something similar to that with Jim Hamry a few months ago when you brought up a similar concept, I think. Can't remember it as a 42.
Yeah, I did, but I think the approach changed. I personally don't think we need an express bus running down that route. I thought it was a bit of a waste, but that's that's management and not me. But if we do have it, I'm wondering if the alternative might be to at least ask him to consider whether it might be run local during the pandemic, especially since DuPont Circle has absolutely no traffic now, which was the major concern for starting the express bus to begin with.
Yeah, well, I anticipate that he'll give me the same response I got before, which was that we're not interested in making any service changes right now with everything in flux and cutbacks coming early next year. So,
all right.
I'm not optimistic about that.
Okay. All right. All right. Sure. Thank you.
Emil, if you can put that in the minutes, I'll make sure to include that in the letter to the board next month and then bring it up in my presentation.
All right, thanks.
We'll attack them from all sides.
All right, hey, thank you, Phil. You know, the other aspect, which isn't a big aspect now, but it's very important, is DuPont Circle has the most used transfer between bus and the Red Line because the elevator is only 20 yards from the bus stop. Mm. And it's, you know, it's a critical point. Now, we don't have that much Red Line traffic at this point, but that bus stop, especially DuPont Circle North, gets a lot of traffic for people coming from the north and transferring into the metro system, as well as seniors and persons with disabilities that want to use that elevator. So at some point in the future, Dave, we need to raise it for that reason.
Okay. Well, I think you'll be seeing a new round of service changes published before long.
Okay.
Actually, with the budget issues.
All right. Thanks. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Calabria, I see your hand up.
Yes. Just to follow up on the bus discussion we had, can you attempt, or is there some way that we can help you get the Fairfax County counterpart to Dan Hibbert to a coming meeting?
I have contacted them. I have sent them an email, a few emails. But if anyone has a specific point of contact and you can share that, that would be great. With Arlington Transit, they have a lot of contracted services. So it's been very difficult to reach somebody. Even through Arlington County, it's been difficult. But I have been working with Fairfax County as well.
The reason why I'm asking is that it'd be useful to learn what advances are being made by our sister companies in the suburbs, such as we heard about from Dan Hibbert today, because eventually we'd like to work on a handbook, a model design handbook for buses. And so after one more of these conversations, we should try and get together with the WMATA's own bus head, who is in the business of purchasing new buses, which reminds me, what is the status now of the Hitachi discussions regarding the 8000 series?
So the last I spoke, the last I heard from them is that they are still under procurement process. And as long as they're in the procurement process, they cannot come and speak with us. So that's probably not going to happen until early next year. Okay. Perhaps January, perhaps February. We are still trying to see. There was some delay. Initially, they were hoping to come and speak with us in fall, October, November, December.
Right.
Because of the delays, they're now anticipating perhaps January or February.
Okay, well, we just don't want them to think we've forgotten about them.
We have not, and they know that. They are well aware that as soon as they're able to come and speak with us, they will let me know, and I do touch base with them every month. So we are in constant communication. After the discussion within the committee last month and the interest about regional bus transits, I've been trying to communicate with all the agencies in the region. We were able to finally get a confirmation from Montgomery, and I'm really glad that Dan Hibbert was able to come share such great information with us. That was wonderful. And I'm hoping that going forward, we will have transit agencies from Virginia as well.
Well, thank you.
This is Phil. You might contact Tappan Banerjee, who I believe is the chair of the Fairfax Disability Committee. Okay. And Tappan might have some contacts with the bus transit people in Fairfax. Doris is also on that committee. So between the two of them, I'm sure they can nag the appropriate people to come see us.
Okay, that's great to know. And I'll be in touch with them both.
Phil, can you contact yourself, the Fairfax committee chair that you mentioned?
Yeah, you know Tappan. He used to be on our committee.
Yes, I know him. Yes. Okay, it'd be good to talk to him after all this time.
Yeah, so let's try and get Fairfax County that way.
Sure. I'm hoping we'll have, if not Fairfax and Arlington, at least one of them next month. That's my hope.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Any public comments?
Tina, this is Anthony. Just to follow up on what you were asking about for the different regions. A while back, I had contacted the the Arlington Commission, the Transit Commission, sort of a similar committee to ours, and they hadn't been meeting. So I'll try reaching out to them again, and perhaps there's somebody we can get to through them. I just thought of it as you were talking, so I wanted to let you know I'll do that.
Sure. Great, Anthony. Well, we're on the new old business and the work plan updates.
Yes, we are. And I just want to say that I know for the last couple of months, Anthony had been trying to get this on the agenda. Today, we have the time. So however you want to move the discussion forward.
Yes, thank you. It's definitely changed the conversation since I originally brought this up. I think a while back, I'm not going to share it now because I think it's out of date, but a while back I had shared a table with, I think, Tino and Phil and a bunch of other people, probably the whole committee at one point, just to sort of see what was coming down the pipe in terms of how our committee here, the BRS, could sort of reorient itself to the changing environment that we find ourselves in. And over the last couple of meetings, we've gotten a lot of new information about the budget and what changes might occur between now and July 1. So I think what I wanted to bring up for discussion is, how can this committee, and this is what I've been thinking about too, how can this committee sort of make sure that the message is getting out? You know, one of the things we talked about last week was the fact that, you know, even if there are changes to the budget in terms of Metro Access or the budgeting things, Metro Access won't be affected until after July. That is sort of something that, unless you're reading very carefully, you might not realize. And so my thought process is, how can the AAC sort of keep in touch beyond the board reports, beyond the people we know personally? How can we get that message out there to our community that, you know, here's what the budget says and here's what the fear is. There's no weekend service, but Metro Access won't be affected. These things will be affected and these won't be. So that's kind of what I wanted to bring up for discussion today, is how can the BRS sort of help with that messaging and getting the message to appropriate people.
Anthony, I'd make a suggestion. Mr. Blake and Metro Access has a listing of all of the disability organizations in the area that are served by Metro Access. And what we might do is invite Lynn Barsox, who is the head of communications, to come in and meet with committee and Mr. Blake and discuss ways that as our changes that are implemented that affect seniors or people with disabilities, the best way to communicate with them. Because Lynn is a communication expert, be it videos, be it advertisements, be it direct mailouts, be it IVRs, you know, whatever. So I would suggest inviting Lynn or one of her subordinates that knows what's going on to come in, along with Mr. Blake and with Ms. Lopez, and talk about the best way to get the message out to the community.
I think that's a great suggestion, Phil. And I do know, you know, I had conversations with David about putting the organization that I work for on that list of people, because we are a disability organization. And just sort of what, you know, as AAC members versus individuals, where can we put the information and say, you know, here it is. I want to make sure that we're, you know, if I send it out on my personal social media, that's one thing. But if my organization sends it out, you know, to the disability communities that we touch, you know, we're reaching more people. So I think that's a great idea to talk to the group, you know, in whatever fashion we can.
Right. Okay. Is there anything else we should bring up at this time?
I was going to, Tino, this is Pat Sheen. I was going to say, I think a good, you know, document already agree on, which we could, you know, make sure we get out, might be the board report. Certainly, that is the consensus of what's been going on at the committee, and that might help with some of the discussion, framing the discussion, and it would allow for all the viewpoints to be, you know, put out there from the AAC, as opposed to all of us trying to interpret different viewpoints. Just a thought as a piece of that communication. I like the Lynn Bauer Sox angle. Let's use the communication channels that are sanctioned and already working.
Mm-hmm.
And the message would be through the report we make to the board?
That's just my thought off the top of my head. You know, that might be one report that goes out. Certainly we're doing that on a regular basis, and it is sanctioned by the entire AAC.
Right.
Filling the Bucks join them, Stephen A. Do you think Brady would be the most important player
Hello?
In the NFC playoff?
I couldn't hear.
I think it was background. I think we're good.
Oh. So, Phil, what's your thought about Patrick's suggestion?
Well, that's a nice monthly newsletter. But as things move rather quickly, I think we also need to have some way to get direct information to the specific organizations.
Now, I don't know if this is what Patrick was suggesting. This is Anthony again, I'm sorry. Could we use the board report as the medium? Can we share the board report beyond, you know, just that it goes to the board, but is it a document that could be shared in other locations, I guess? I know it's on the website.
I thought that was Patrick's recommendation. In any event, what do you think, Phil?
There's no reason. It's a public document. And so, again, the question is, do we let Lynn's office send it out as communications, or Carol or Chris? And that's internal politics as to what what the pecking order is who sends it out. But it's there.
Yeah.
But I also think as things go out, the communications office here is very Title VI sensitive. And they're worried about clicking all the boxes in Title VI. And that's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a minimal. And to get the mailing list or the blast list or the phone list or whatever to all of the organizations that WMATA does, that expansion, I think, is important mm-hmm. to get it out. And that's some way that we could work it out and just be more efficient in the communications.
Mm-hmm.
I know I wasn't going to break in with Metro Access to Mr. Blake, but that's part of the things. This weekend, once again, the phone systems went down. And so the question is, what do you do to get that communication out to the people that need that particular service? And the phone systems are down, so there's no way to call them. And is there some alternative to the internet, which is what they used? Or how do you communicate? And it's just a question. I don't have an answer to it. But that's happened now twice in the last month. I know I'm lucky to get on this call because my internet went down until 2 minutes before the meeting started. and I finally got it back up. So I think, again, that's quote, emergency communications on the weekends. So I'll throw that out for everybody else to talk about.
Well, I see, Vanessa, you have your hand up.
Yes, and I mean, we can address that, but my question, I guess it will fall under security, and it may also want to be something Mr. Christian addressed next Monday, but recently when I called in to make reservations, it is stating something about starting in January, there are going to be audio and visual recordings in the vehicles. So I just want someone to expound more on that because I didn't know that was going to be happening.
Actually, that's what we spoke about during the AAC meeting last week.
Okay, so I apparently, because I record them and I play them back. I don't recall hearing that. So
I thought you had asked the question. In fact, I thought you asked, but maybe not. But this is the discussion we had when we were saying that, like, you get on bus and rail, there's in a station and in the public, you're being recorded. Well, we're now adding that safety feature to the Metro Access vehicles as well.
Yeah, Paul has put that on the agenda for next Monday also for those folks that the public, a lot of the general public only comes to the Metro Access meetings but don't come to the AAC meetings. And so Ms. Williams-Hall is going to give a brief repeat on Monday, so you can ask her then.
Okay, that'll be good. Thank you. Because you're referring to sedans, Mr. Blake.
No, ma'am. This is going to eventually be on all the vehicles, but what we're saying, we're starting with the vans and we were updating the MDTs. Excuse me, we're updating the drive cams, and the drive cams currently record event triggered incidents, but now there's going to be ongoing recordings for the safety of customers and the drivers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And remember, we were, well, okay, but yes, that's what we were talking about last week.
Okay. All right. Thank
you. Yes, ma'am.
Chair Calabria.
Well, actually, maybe it's premature to bring it up, so I'll forego further discussion.
Was there anything else anybody would like to discuss about the topics, work plan, or is that discussion coming to a wrap?
I think we're coming to a wrap.
Okay.
And this will be a record because I've never been to a meeting in which we adjourn by 5:35. But
I'm going to ruin your record.
Oh, okay.
It's Philippa. I just had a quick thing to comment on. Last year I mentioned there was a leak in the U Street Cardozo, the 13th Street exit of the Metro station. And last year it turned into like a little skating rink. It was so much when the temperatures dropped below freezing that that leak became a stream. And then it was just, you know, it was just hazardous. So I am noticing some leaks. Again, right now it's not a pond and it's not a skating rink, but I just wanted to get on the record that if they don't address this, it could be a problem again and it's going to be hazardous to people. And I am through and you can go.
Along that line, those of us in the South has heard there's a blizzard coming.
Right.
And the question is everybody aware of what the emergency situations are and how things are going to work for bus, rail, and Metro Access, because that'll be probably after the blizzard hits. We'll still have our meeting because we can get there even in the blizzard, but.
Right.
Well, at the moment, right now, there's the forecast vary depending on your location. For the primary Metro service area, which includes Metro Access, they're forecasting 2 to 4 inches of wet snow.
Hmm.
So what that means is that there'll be some impact to service, but there does not appear to be the blizzard in the metro service area. Now, up in, I think they said Frederick County and maybe Carroll County, they're talking as much as 18 inches of snow. That's, you know, tremendous if it does turn out to be that way. But right now we look like we're gonna have impact to service, but I don't anticipate shutting down, certainly not Metro Access at this moment. My goal is, I'm right now in Florida. I passed our favorite hospital, Dr. Phil, just a little while ago. And I just hope to get back safely tomorrow night so we can be on site and not hampered by any incoming weather. But Metro Access customers will hear messaging tomorrow just to let them know that Wednesday the service could be impacted, so they should plan accordingly. But right now, Metro Bus and Metro Rail schedules may adjust slightly, but I think there'll be service running on Wednesday at this point.
Make people aware of slip and fall, because wet snow, there's nothing worse than that.
Right. Gotcha.
Right. And the after effects, too.
getting back to Philippa's issue, maybe we should have David or Carol look into it. And I mean, this seems serious, and it's...
Yes, I will ask Carol if she could follow up with the committee. Well, first let me know so I can, if I need to escalate it, I will. But if she can be prepared to give the committee an update next month, if not sooner.
Okay.
I'll check into the Youth Street Cardozo station. We have leaks at several stations, and WMATA is working as hard as possible to fix some of these. Sometimes, believe it or not, leaks occur because there's some sort of a drain in an adjacent facility, and it's not ours. Their drain systems are clogged and they're leaking into our station. And we have to figure out where the leaks are coming from. It's a diagnostic process. And then after we do that, we get stuck with the fact that it's not in under our purview. So we have to go around that and try to organize. And then once we get it fixed, then they unclog the drain. And then the next year it gets clogged again. So those are the unfortunate coordination processes we have to go through. But I'll bring it up and see, perhaps okay. They already know what the issue is, and then they can perhaps mitigate it or try to start talking to wherever, to whoever's responsible for the cause of the leak.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
So Philippa, could you bird dog that? It sounds complicated of an issue, but you know, regardless of who's to blame, people could get hurt. And our problem.
Yes, I will keep my eye on it.
Yeah, you bird dog that, okay.
Okay.
Is there anything else then? And I see it is 5:38. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Any opposition? Hearing no opposition, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Safe trips home.
Thank you. Excellent meeting.
Thank you.
You especially, Christian, if you're way down there and coming back.
Yes, coming back tomorrow evening. But we should be fine, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Okay.
We will give you a tequila.
Yes.
You will be fine.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you. Good meeting.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great
day. Hi, Christian. Take care of my business.
I will, Miss.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.